Welcome to Soil Matters. This is Tanya, and we were just listening to a song called The Chips Are Stacked Against Me by Body Improvement Calendar. Body Improvement Calendar are a relatively new project from the UK. Some people might know the project German Army. And that song was released in January 2020. And before we get started, I want to recognize all of the Indigenous caretakers and elders from across this planet, past, present, and future. My name's Tanya. This is a little get together to discuss all things soil, which has merged into all things environment and all things climate. And we attempt to recognize privilege as humans in this big ecosystem, and we also attempt to merge perspectives from physical sciences, social sciences, arts, and literatures. The world is run by those who show up, said Professor Marsha Langton M. And today I'm giving a little update about COP26, which is the Conference of the Parties. This is the 26th Conference of the International Parties with regard to climate change. The first one happened in 1995. The Paris Climate Accord in 2015 was the most important COP yet. It was the strongest, firmest international climate agreement ever. And the aim of this COP26, this meeting that started last week and is going to end this Friday, goes for 10 working days, is to produce a text on what's going to happen next with regard to climate change. And today we're just going to go over a little update, your Radio Patapu. And before I talk any further, I want to play one more track. This is called My Agenda. And yeah, obviously I'm talking about it because we're talking about the international climate change agenda. The artist is Dorian Electra. They go by they, them pronouns. And I want to read a little bit from the lyrics because I think the lyrics are very, very special. This song is also featuring the very important, very prominent band Pussy Riot. So here are the lyrics. I've got this plan now, it's on my mind, and soon enough, now everyone will fall in line. It's closing in now, you can't escape, every corner waiting just to infiltrate. My agenda might offend ya, out here flexing in my rainbow suspenders. My agenda will infect ya, out to get ya, it is my. Have you seen my pamphlets? Have you read my blog? Have you seen my army marching down to City Hall? You can always spot us by the way we walk, as we're plotting to take over and destroy you all. Moscow became a capital of gay Roper, all homophobes turned into queer. Spiritual bonds are replaced with straps. Our rainbow mob is marching down the Red Square. Gay propaganda, we love you everywhere, from Chechnya to Uganda. We're dancing together on the Red Square. We have lots of sex, but our sex is safe. Gay propaganda, we make love from Chechnya to Uganda. Gay propaganda, we make love from Chechnya to Uganda. My agenda might offend ya, out here flexing in my rainbow suspenders. My agenda, my freaky gender, out here flexing in my rainbow suspenders. Poison in the water, you lap it up. I know you're very thirsty, baby, for this drug. We mind control you just for fun. We're out here turning frogs homosexual. Alright, well, I hope you enjoyed those lyrics. In the previous COP26 podcast that I released before COP started, I'd outlined 5 points which I thought were going to be hot topics at this year's COP. And so one of them was coal needs to go. And the second was talking about the carbon pricing system. Excuse me. The third one was that rich countries cause the damage and therefore are more financially responsible. The fourth point is the recognition that vulnerable countries need adaptation support. And the fifth point is investments in adaptation must increase, and we need to begin discussing adaptation more so than mitigation, which has been the focus of all COPs till now. So what's happened? Well, there has been lots of discussion on how to create a commitment to end the investment in new coal power generation. And so there is an agreement, not signed by everybody, but signed by, I don't have the numbers right now, but quite some countries. Basically, it's saying that they have agreed to end investment in building any more coal power generators from the 2030s onwards for major economies, and from the 2040s onwards for developing countries. So I think that's a terrible, terrible, terrible agreement, because this means a coal power plant can be built in the 2030s with a 50-year lifetime. Coal power stations on average have a 50-year lifetime, some more, some less. So I don't think we should be building more power stations in 20, not only in 2030, but in 2039. That's in major economies, and in 2049 for developing countries. The agreement says that's okay, and I don't agree. I think that's way too weak. Good news is that we have agreed for the first time to reduce methane emissions. There's never been an international agreement on reducing methane emissions before, so I see that as real progress. And we've agreed to reduce methane emissions by 30% by 2030, and a lot of countries, 105 countries, have committed to that, including the US and the EU. And the reason that this is so important is because methane is actually 80 times more powerful over a 20-year period. So if we're trying to reach net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2030 or by 2050 or even 2100, we need to be considering methane. And particularly on the short-term period, so on the period of looking at 2050 to reduce to get to net zero, if we reduce methane, that is a really, really powerful weapon, because it's 80 times more powerful than CO2. So it contributes to the impacts of climate change 80 times the amount of CO2. The US, the UK, France, Germany, and the EU have committed $8.5 billion to help South Africa decarbonize its coal-heavy energy system. I feel like South Africa is rich enough that it can do it itself, and it's being a little baby, but okay. The carbon pricing system, I'd say we haven't heard too much about this. I guess. Yeah, I'm not sure of the reason for that. Perhaps it's because that's more needs to really incorporate financial bodies and economic experts, and perhaps the discussions happening right now are more involving policy leaders and negotiators. So the point of recognition of the rich versus or the developed versus undeveloped countries, and who is responsible, and are the developed countries more financially responsible? We have heard a lot about that. And there are a lot of developing countries putting money forward to help undeveloped or developing countries. We still need to wait to see more details about this. And I'm going to talk about this point a little bit more, because in a moment, I'm going to read from the draft paper of the Glasgow Agreement that I guess will be published maybe at the end of the week or maybe in 2 weeks, and it will be the agreements that are the outcomes of this 10-day meeting. And there they talk more about some financial details and specifically about the financial responsibility of developed nations. On the issue of vulnerable nations and recognizing that vulnerable nations need support, and what I mean by vulnerable nation and how that's different from undeveloped or developing. So a vulnerable nation, I am talking about nations that are particularly susceptible to climate change. And a lot of them are developing nations, but I guess not all developing nations are necessarily particularly vulnerable, though a lot of them are. And not all vulnerable nations are developing nations, but a lot of them are. So a lot of the vulnerable, the point is the nations that are vulnerable and developing need extra care and they need extra support. And we saw Germany and the EU promise to finance adaptation methods 50-50. So the developing and the vulnerable developing nation pays 50% of the cost, and there will be a common fund from developed countries that will pay the other 50%, which I think is really necessary, called for, and appropriate. Investments in adaptation. The UK, the US, and several other countries, along with the Bezos Earth Fund and the EU, have pledged more than $1.5 billion to protect forests, peatlands, woohoo, and other critical carbon stores in the Congo Basin Plan. Over 100 countries have committed to halting deforestation by 2030, and this represents 85% of the world's forests. I think that's absolutely fantastic, and we should be able to push this number up closer to 100%. Jeff Bezos committed $2 billion to restoring natural habitats and transforming food systems. The Rockefeller Foundation, the IKEA Foundation, and the Bezos Earth Fund launched the Global Energy Alliance for People and the Planet to tackle access to renewable energy in Africa, Asia, and Latin America during the next decade. This alliance is going to include governments and world governing bodies such as the Asian Development Bank, the World Bank, Italy, the UK, and Denmark. Everyone has noticed that China is not present. I also want to note that Australia is avoiding any international commitments, and they claim to be doing domestic work on adapting to climate change and reducing net greenhouse gas emissions, but I don't believe it. So I think another important thing that's come out, so that's responding to the 5 points of what are we doing about coal, what's happening with the carbon pricing systems, what's happening with the financial responsibility of developed rich countries, what's happening with recognizing vulnerable developing countries need help transitioning, and how are investments in adaptation going? That was those points. The other important things that we need to mention are that with all of the current commitments promised at the moment, then we have committed to approximately a 2.4 degree increase in warming. So the Paris Climate Agreement is that to limit warming to 1.5 degrees, that this is approximately a safe limit for the world, that we will still be impacted by widespread extreme weather, sea level rise, drought, floods, heat waves, and fierce storms, which will cause devastation across the globe. But within 1.5 degrees, we can sort of manage that. And beyond 1.5 degrees, it becomes a lot more difficult to manage. And beyond 2 degrees, it becomes again a lot more difficult to manage. And so, if you look at the commitments that have been promised between now to happen, like the changes that have been promised to happen between now and 2050, we have committed to 2.4 degrees of warming. If you look at the commitments that have been promised on a longer term between now and 2070, then we've committed to 1.9 degrees of warming. And I want to say, make the point that there's a big difference between commitments and actions. And a lot of countries commit things that they don't do, and very few countries go above and beyond and do things that they haven't committed. So I think when we're looking at countries' commitments and then the temperature impacts that we're going to see, we should really be a little bit conservative and a little bit pessimistic about what will happen. So if everyone follows the short-term commitments between now and 2050, we're going to see at least 2.4 degrees of warming. If everyone follows the commitments that the long-term commitments that they've promised between now and 2070, we're going to see at least 1.9 degrees of warming. And those warming numbers I'm talking about are
So one of
by
the
the
big
end of the
outcomes,
century, which is
I think so far,
2100.
and a very recent outcome at the COP26, is a commitment was just announced yesterday. It's called the Breakthrough Agenda's annual global checkpoint process, and so it's committing to have an annual, or like, a global checkpoint next year in 2022, to look at how are we going with the commitments that we've made thus far. So basically, it outlines different stages. They've published a flow chart which starts in the fourth quarter of 2021, and then the next checkpoint is the first quarter of 2022, the second quarter of 2022, the third quarter of 2022, and ends in the fourth quarter of 2022, and then is replicated in subsequent years as needed. So the task in this quarter, the fourth quarter of 2021, is to launch a breakthrough agenda at the COP26. Excuse me. In the next quarter, there's 2 points that need to be focused on. So one is to report on the state of the transition, which they describe as an analysis of the progress against the objectives and the opportunities for and the benefits from enhanced cooperation. The other activity is to convene leading initiatives in each sector, so to explore better coordination, gaps, and enhanced actions to achieve each goal that was announced in the COP26, informing and being informed by the draft State of the Transition report. And in the third quarter of 2022, is to look at the state of the transition ministerial. So ministers meet to discuss the state of the transition, report findings and review and agree proposals for enhanced collaborative action. In the fourth quarter is new leaders level commitments, and this is described as new and enhanced commitments from existing and new participating countries for enhanced ambition and action for new sectoral breakthroughs. So it's basically, I guess, trying to apply some pressure. So to really encourage the analysis, a more working process to look at the initiatives that are being taken up and look at whether progress is happening, whether objectives are being met, and whether there can be how can we make better progress. And so it's just at the moment, we've just had a COP26, we've had, the COPs, which are these very large international conferences, and now it's trying to step up the heat so there's more communication in between the COPs, so that there's more action happening in between the COPs. I'll go through a little bit the draft paper that has been released so far on what's going to be in the Glasgow Agreement. So it's just all in dot points, and I'm going to read out the most important ones and perhaps comment either there. First I'll give an overview. So the first dot point is they talk about the context, the international climate change context at the moment. The next point is adaptation. The next point is the finance of adaptation measures. The next point is talking about mitigation of climate change. And the next point is talking about financing, capacity building, and technology transfer. Then there's a point on the loss and damage related to climate change. There's a point on implementation. There's a point on collaboration. Alrighty. So, the first point, context, is that there's an importance to have multilateralism and international cooperation in accordance with international law. We need to address the impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic, particularly in developing countries. There is an urgency of action to keep the 1.5 degrees of warming Paris commitment alive. It is a critical decade to deliver Paris goals on mitigation, adaptation, and finance. Work should be guided by principles and provisions of convention, with a capital C, equity, common, but differentiated responsibilities and respective capabilities in light of different national circumstances. The Glasgow Agreement welcomes the IPCC report and looks forward to further IPCC reports' concerns about the state of the climate. There is a need for increased ambition in light of science to address gaps across all pillars of the Paris Agreement in a balanced manner. The Glasgow Agreement recognises the importance of human rights, gender, and rights of Indigenous people. Wow, this is an interesting one. The Glasgow Agreement recognised the integrity of Mother Earth in the context of sustainable development and poverty alleviation and climate justice. I really am curious what the Glasgow Agreement here considers to be Mother Earth. It almost sounds a little bit spiritual, like it gives a personification to the world. It also gives a gender to the world. And it also notes that the importance of the World Leaders Summit and including any breakthrough that happens at Glasgow. I'm going to skip ahead to the mitigation point. So, in terms of mitigation, there is an urgency of action towards the Paris temperature goal of well below 2 degrees, pursuing efforts to 1.5 degrees. And there is an emphasis on the importance of keeping warming to 1.5 degrees. There is an importance of responding to the science, specifically to the IPCC findings, pre-2030 action, and global net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050, and the carbon budget. Acknowledged, updated, and enhanced NDCs and long-term strategies. NDCs are the national policy commitments. From each country. It stands for the Nationally Determined Contributions, and it looks at it's basically the greenhouse gas emissions of each sector in each country. So the contribution of each sector in each country to greenhouse gas emissions, and that's reported in a national way. So it's the National Determined Contributions. We need to accelerate efforts to 2030 and align short and long-term targets through programs and roadmaps. Parties who have not yet submitted NDCs are expected to do so in 2022. We need to reaffirm Article 4.3 and 4.11 of the Paris Agreement, and parties are to revisit 2030 NDCs to align with temperature goal. I would like to then go to read these sections of the Paris Agreement. So it's Article 4.3. Let's have a look at what that says. Article 4.3 of the Paris Agreement says, each party's successive nationally determined contribution will represent a progression beyond the party's then current nationally determined contribution and reflect its highest possible ambition, reflecting its common but differentiated responsibilities and respective capabilities in the light of different national circumstances. Okay, so it's saying that nations have differentiated responsibilities based on their abilities. And then we're going to look at 4.11, which says, a party may at any time adjust its existing nationally determined contribution with a view to enhancing its level of ambition in accordance with a guidance adopted by the Conference of the Parties serving as the meeting of the to this agreement. Alright, so you can update your NDC to improve it, to make it more ambitious. Very good, very good. There will be, there needs to be, when the NDC commitments need to be updated at least annually. There needs to be an annual high-level roundtable on pre-2030 ambition in the COP27, which will happen in Egypt. The leader-level event to consider 2030 ambition needs to happen ahead of the global stocktake. There needs to be a renewed call for submission of long-term strategies that chart a just transition to net zero. We need to look at opportunities to reduce non-carbon dioxide gases, very important, things like methane. There needs to be enhanced support and cooperation for the development and implementation of NDCs. All right, adaptation. Adaptation is of vital importance in light of increasing temperatures and increasing impacts. We need to acknowledge the science, and we're looking forward to the Working Group 2's publication in the IPCC report. We need to acknowledge progress made through the Adaptation Committee and acknowledge plans and communications submitted to date. We need to acknowledge the gap and need to urgently accelerate action and scale up finance to support developing countries. Yeah, I think a lot of needs to be happening in adaptation and not enough. Those dot points are very vague, very unspecific, and it says like what that says to me is we're just starting to think about it. Finance, capacity building and technology transfer. We need to urgently scale up finance flows to the levels needed to support developing countries in implementation. There is deep concern that the $100 billion promised has not yet been met. And I mentioned this in an earlier podcast. And let me see if I can find it. But, oh yeah. The OECD the OECD has reported that only $80 billion have been given into the fund to support poorer countries to meet their emission reductions target, which is falling short of the $100 billion promised. That's serious. And so we're still looking for that money. That was an outcome from the Paris Agreement in 2015. Okay, emphasis. We need to enhance access to finance, including through guidance of the climate funds. We need to look at the needs of developing countries. We need to improve the quality of finance. So increase grant-based resources, acknowledge debt burdens. We need to accelerate action to make finance flows consistent with a pathway to low greenhouse gas emissions and a climate resilience development. The multinational development banks must align with the Paris Agreement. There is an importance of public and private sources of finance. And there is a goal posted for 2025 to look at the adaptation financing. We need to enhance support for developing countries. Loss and damage. Acknowledge the ongoing and increasing reality of loss and damage with rising temperatures and basis in science. There is an urgency of action. There is a need for increased and additional financial support. Implementation. We need to move to implement and deliver information on policies. We welcome the start of the global stocktake and we need to support participants. There's going to be an update on the Paris rule book. We need increased support for enhanced transparency framework and reporting requirements. We need specific measures for emission intensive sectors, actions to transition to low carbon economies and response measures. Okay, I think this is my favorite section, the implementation. It seems like the most tangible, but needs to be longer and more detailed. Collaboration. Importance of international collaboration, capacity building, technology and innovation, of course. Look at the role of non-party stakeholders, of course. Look at the importance and recognition of work of high-level champions. There needs to be recognition and follow-up on the ocean dialogue. There needs to be recognition and follow-up on the land dialogue and role of nature and biodiversity, including forests, in adaptation and mitigation. Very interested in that. And these updates will happen in the COP27 in Egypt. Okay, fantastic. What I want to talk about next is how are the different countries going in terms of their net zero greenhouse gas emission commitments. Basically, every country is now aiming towards net zero greenhouse gas emissions in some way, shape, or form. Or on the global level, that's what we're aiming towards. There's two countries in the world that have achieved net zero greenhouse gas emissions. I don't think anyone will guess which countries they are because they aren't particularly famous for being particularly environmentally friendly, or they're not particularly loud in the international climate political community. So these two countries are Suriname and Bhutan, and they have reached net zero greenhouse gas emissions. And then I've got a list of countries, or then there's two countries that have it in their national domestic policy to reach net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2045, and that is Germany and also Sweden. Then there's a list of countries, about 10 of them, that also have it in their policy to to meet net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. I'm going to read out these countries. It is the European Union, Japan, the United Kingdom, France, Canada, South Korea, Spain, Denmark, New Zealand, Hungary, and Luxembourg. So they are fantastic efforts. There's three countries who have it proposed in their domestic law. that they will meet greenhouse gas emission net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. This law has not been approved yet. This is happening in Ireland, Chile, and also Fiji. Then there is a lot of countries, which I'm going to read them all out, where they have committed on an international level to meet net zero greenhouse gas emission targets, but they haven't put this in their domestic law. So they've committed to something, but they haven't done the action yet. So Finland committed to net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2035. Austria committed to net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2040, along with Iceland. Then there's a lot of countries who have committed to net zero greenhouse gas emissions on the in the international world, but not in the domestic world, by 2050. This is a long list. It includes the US, South Africa, Italy, Brazil, Australia, Switzerland, Argentina, Thailand, Norway, United Arab Emirates, Israel, Malaysia, Colombia, Vietnam, Portugal, Slovakia, Dominican Republic, Panama, Costa Rica, Uruguay, Slovenia, Latvia, Nepal, Laos, Jamaica, Namibia, Mauritius, Monaco, Malawi, Maldives, Barbados, Andorra, Cabo Verde, the Seychelles, Solomon Islands, Grenada, Vatican City, Marshall Islands, Nauru, Turkey, China, Russia, That's it. And they have committed in international policy to reduce their net greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. China, Saudi Arabia, Nigeria, Kazakhstan, Ukraine, Sri Lanka, Bahrain have committed to reduce their net greenhouse gas emissions to 2060, to zero in 2060, in international policy, not in domestic policy. India have committed to do that by 2070 in international policy, not in domestic policy. And then the following: Mexico, the Netherlands, Belgium, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Czechia, Romania, Peru, Greece, Ecuador, Angola, Ethiopia, Myanmar, Croatia, Bulgaria, Tanzania, Lebanon, Lithuania, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Sudan, Estonia, Uganda, Yemen, Zambia, Cyprus, Cambodia, Senegal, Trinidad and Tobago, Papua New Guinea, Afghanistan, Mali, Mozambique, Malta, Burkina Faso, Madagascar, Nicaragua, Armenia, Bahamas, South Sudan, Chad, Guinea, Benin, Haiti, Rwanda, Niger, Togo, Mauritania, Somalia, Sierra Leone, Guyana, Liberia, Burundi, Djibouti, Lesotho, Timor-Leste, Eritrea, Central Republic, African Republic, Belize, St. Lucia, Antigua, and Barbuda, Gambia, Guinea-Bissau, Comoros, St. Kitts and Nevis, Vanuatu, Samoa, St. Vincent and the Grenadines, Dominica, Cook Islands, Tonga, Micronesia, Sao Tome and Principe, Palau, Kiribati, Tuvalu and Niue do not have international commitments to reduce their net greenhouse gas emissions to zero. That long list of countries, with a lot of countries that I actually don't know how to pronounce their names, as you might have guessed. One of the last things I'm going to do today is tell you a little bit about the Paris Agreement. I just want to read out some of the important articles in this convention. So the Paris Agreement obviously came about in 2015 as a result of a previous COP meeting, and basically at this COP, we're reviewing a lot of what is in the Paris Agreement, and we're coming up with a new, better, improved, more stringent, more ambitious, more motivated version. So Article 2, which is pretty much the beginning, because Article 1 is definitions, like a glossary. So Article 2 says, this agreement in enhancing the implementation of the convention, and the convention being the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, which was 1992. So it's basically, that convention began the conference of the parties, the COPs, and the parties is basically every country that signs on to agree to the convention. And the convention basically being a commitment to work together to decrease the, to decrease international anthropogenic climate change. This agreement, in enhancing the implementation of the convention, including its objective, aims to strengthen the global response to the threat of climate change in the context of sustainable development and efforts to eradicate poverty by holding the increase of global temperature to well below 2 degrees above pre-industrial levels and pursuing efforts to limit the temperature increase to 1.5 degrees above pre-industrial levels, recognizing that this would significantly reduce the risks and impacts of climate change. That's possibly the most important sentence in this document. Okay, so to eradicate poverty, including increasing the ability to adapt to the adverse impacts of climate change and foster climate resilience and low greenhouse gas emissions development in a manner that does not threaten food production. And by making finance flows consistent with a pathway towards low greenhouse gas emissions and climate resilient development. This agreement will be implemented to reflect equity and the principle of common but differentiated responsibilities and respective capabilities in the light of differential national circumstances. So that basically means they're recognizing that some countries are more equipped to deal with climate change than others, and that this responsibility should then be dispersed not only based on your ability to address climate change. Article 3. As national determined contributions to greenhouse gas emissions to the global response to climate change, all parties are to undertake and communicate ambitious efforts as defined in Articles 4, 7, 9, 10, 11, and 13 with the view to achieving the purpose of this agreement as set out in Article 2. So the purpose of the agreement is in Article 2, and ambitious efforts are in Articles 4, 7, 9, 10, 11, and 13. The efforts of all parties will present a progression over time while recognizing the need to support developing countries for the effective implementation of this agreement. So basically, we need to increase our efforts over time, and we need to also support developing nations in doing so. Article 4. In order to achieve long-term temperature goals set out in Article 2, 1.5 degrees, aim to reach global peaking of greenhouse gas emissions as soon as possible, recognizing that peaking will take longer for developing countries, and to undertake rapid reductions, therefore, in accordance with best available science, so as to achieve a balance between anthropogenic emissions by sources and removals by sinks in the second half of the century, on the basis of equity and in the context of sustainable development and efforts to eradicate poverty. So saying that developing nations should not increase their poverty just to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions, and that we can also use removal of greenhouse gas emissions as part of the approach. Developed country parties should continue taking the lead by undertaking economy-wide absolute emission reduction targets. Developing country parties should continue enhancing their mitigation efforts and are encouraged to move over time towards economy-wide emission reduction or limitation targets in light of different national circumstances. The least developed countries and small island developing states may prepare and communicate strategies, plans, and actions for low greenhouse gas emissions development reflecting their special circumstances. So now I'm reading point 9 of Article 4. Each party shall communicate a nationally determined contribution every 5 years in accordance with decision CP.21 and any relevant decisions of the conference of the parties serving as the meeting of the parties to this agreement, and be informed by the outcomes of the global stocktake referred to in Article 14. Okay, Article 5. Parties should take action to conserve and enhance as appropriate sinks and reservoirs of greenhouse gases as referred to in Article 14, Paragraph 1 of the Convention, including forests. Parties are encouraged to take action to implement and support, including through results-based payments, the existing framework as set out in related guidance and decisions already agreed under the Convention for policy approaches and positive incentives for activities relating to reducing emissions from deforestation and forest degradation and the role of conservation, sustainable management of forests, and enhancement of forest carbon stocks in developing countries, and alternative policy approaches such as joint mitigation and adaptation approaches for the integral and sustainable management of forests, while reaffirming the importance of incentivizing, as appropriate, non-carbon benefits associated with such approaches. Article 6. Okay, so that was Article 5. So it begins to discuss what are the actions to implement and support and pay for new technologies and adaptation methods. Article 6. Parties recognise that some parties choose to pursue voluntary cooperation in the implementation of their nationally determined contributions to allow for higher ambition in their mitigation and adaptation actions and to promote sustainable development and environmental integrity. Parties shall, where engaging on a voluntary basis in cooperative approaches that involve the use of internationally transferred mitigation outcomes towards nationally determined contributions, promote sustainable development and ensure environmental integrity and transparency, including in governance, and shall apply robust accounting to ensure, inter alia, the avoidance of double counting, consistent with guidance adopted by the Conference of the Parties serving at the meeting, as the meeting of the parties to this agreement. So people can do things in their own way without having to join on with one of these like multinational, multicultural, international agreements about mitigating or adapting to climate change. It sort of says you can go it alone and then just let us know in an appropriate way what you're doing and what impact it has. And now I read point 4 from Article 6. A mechanism to contribute to the mitigation of greenhouse gas emissions and support sustainable development is hereby established under the authority and guidance of the Conference of the Parties, serving as the meeting of the parties to this agreement for use by parties on a voluntary basis. It shall be preserved by a body designated by the Conference of the Parties, serving as the meeting of the parties, and shall aim to promote the mitigation of greenhouse gas emissions while fostering sustainable development, to incentivize and facilitate participation in the mitigation of greenhouse gas emissions by public and private entities authorized by a party, to contribute to the reduction of emission levels in the host party, which will benefit from mitigation activities resulting in emission reductions that can also be used by another party to fulfill its nationally determined contribution and to deliver an overall mitigation in global emissions. So in case that isn't clear to you, this is talking about the possibility of a carbon trading scheme. So it's talking about that one country can reduce its emissions and that its reduction can benefit another party. So they're talking about the buying and selling of carbon products here. emission reductions resulting from the mechanism referred to in paragraph 4 shall not be used to demonstrate achievement of the host party if used by another party to demonstrate achievement of its nationally determined contribution. So both parties can't get, merits for one reduction. The conference of the parties serving as the meeting of the parties to this agreement shall ensure that a share of the proceeds from activities under the mechanism referred to in paragraph 4 is used to cover administrative expenses. The conference of the parties serving as the meeting of the parties to this agreement shall adopt rules, modalities, and procedures for the mechanism referred to in paragraph 4. Well, that's very interesting. It's saying that the COP will adopt procedures for this mechanism. Okay, point 8. Parties recognise the importance of integrated, holistic and balanced non-market approaches being available to parties to assist in the implementation of their nationally determined contributions. These approaches shall aim to promote mitigation and adaptation ambition, enhance public and private sector participation in the implementation of new technologies and enable opportunities for coordination across instruments and relevant institutional arrangements. Article 7. Parties hereby establish the global goal on adaptation of enhancing adaptive capacity, strengthening resilience and reducing vulnerability to climate change, with a view to contributing to sustainable development and ensuring an adequate adaptation response in the context of the temperature goal referred to in Article 2. Parties recognize that adaptation is a global challenge faced by all, with local, subnational, national, regional and international dimensions, and that it is a key component of and makes a contribution to the long-term global response to climate change to protect people, livelihoods and ecosystems, taking into account the urgent and immediate needs of those developing country parties that are particularly vulnerable to the adverse effects of climate change. The adaptation efforts of developing country parties shall be recognised in accordance with the modalities to be adopted by the Conference of the Parties. Parties acknowledge that adaptation action should follow a country-driven, gender-responsive, participatory and fully transparent approach, taking into consideration vulnerable groups, communities and ecosystems, and should be based on and guided by the best available science and, as appropriate, traditional knowledge of Indigenous peoples and local knowledge systems, with a view to integrating adaptation into relevant socioeconomic and environmental policies and actions where appropriate. Article 8. Parties recognize the importance of averting, minimizing, and addressing loss and damage associated with the adverse effects of climate change, including extreme weather events and slow onset events, and the role of sustainable development in reducing the risk of climate change damage. Point 4 of this Article 8 says, accordingly, areas of cooperation and facilitation to enhance understanding, action and support may include early warning systems, emergency preparedness, slow onset events, events that may involve irreversible and permanent loss and damage, comprehensive risk and management, risk insurance facilities, climate risk pooling and other insurance solutions, non-economic losses and resilience of communities, livelihoods and ecosystems. Article 9. Developed country parties shall provide financial resources to assist developing country parties with respect to both mitigation and adaptation in continuation of their existing obligations under the Convention. Also, another really important sentence in this agreement. All right, Article 10. Parties share a long-term vision on the importance of fully realizing technology development and transfer in order to improve resilience to climate change and to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And we did see a lot of this year at the COP26. There were a lot of presentations surrounding or like outlining what technology specific countries were using, what breakthroughs had they had in implementing effective policy frameworks in their own countries domestically, and how might other countries be able to learn from that, and also how they might be able to collaborate to assist the initiation of these successes in other countries. Article 11. Capacity building under this agreement should enhance the capacity and ability of developing country parties, in particular countries with the least capacity, such as the least developed countries, and those that are particularly vulnerable to the adverse effects of climate change, such as small island developing states, to take effective climate action, including inter alia, to implement adaptation and mitigation actions, and should facilitate technology development, dissemination and deployment, access to climate finance, relevant aspects of education, training and public awareness, and the transparent, timely and accurate communication of information. Article 12. Parties shall cooperate in taking measures as appropriate to enhance climate change education, training, public awareness, public participation and public access to information. Recognize the importance of these steps with respect to enhancing actions under this agreement. Article 13. In order to build mutual trust and confidence and to promote effective implementation and enhance transparency framework for action and support with built-in flexibility, which takes into account parties' different capacities and builds upon collective experience, is hereby established. I'm going to read point 2 from Article 13. The transparency framework shall provide flexibility in the implementation of the provisions of this article to those developing country parties that need it in the light of their capacities. The modalities, procedures and guidelines referred to in paragraph 13 of this article shall reflect such flexibility. The transparency framework shall build upon and enhance the transparency arrangements under the Convention, recognizing the special circumstances of least developed countries and small island developing states, and be implemented in a facilitative, non-intrusive, non-punitive manner, respectful of national sovereignty, and avoid placing undue burden on parties. Point 7 of Article 13, each party shall regularly provide the following information: a national inventory report of anthropogenic emissions by sources and removals of sinks of greenhouse gases, prepared using good practice methodologies accepted by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change and agreed upon by the Conference of the Parties. Information necessary to track progress made in implementing and achieving nationally determined contributions. Each party... Yeah, that's it. Article 14. The Conference of the Parties, serving as the meeting of the parties to this agreement, shall periodically take stock of the implementation of this agreement to assess the collective progress towards achieving the purpose of this agreement and its long-term goals, referred to as the global stocktake. It shall do so in a comprehensive and facilitative manner, considering mitigation, adaptation, and the means of implementation and support, and in light of equity and the best available science. So I think what's really fantastic this year is that we're moving this global stocktake to be more regular. Instead of it only happening during the Conference of the Parties, it's now going to be happening intermittently. So next year, already in 2022, we'll have another global stocktake. Article 15. A mechanism to facilitate implementation of and promote compliance with the provisions of this agreement is hereby established. Article 16. The Conference of the Parties, the supreme body of the Convention, shall serve as the meeting of the parties to this agreement. Article 17. The Secretariat, established by Article 8 of the Convention, shall serve as the Secretariat of the Agreement. And Article 18 and 19, these are a little bit administrative. All right. Okay, so this was signed in Paris on the 12th day of December in 2015. And we're looking forward to the Glasgow Agreement. I also just want to thank you all for listening. I hope this little update has been informative. This is Soil Matters. Please follow us on Instagram. Please follow us on your podcast platform. You can listen to older podcasts on your podcast platform. You can also find us on Mixcloud. Just search for Soil Matters. And please, yeah, if you're using Apple Podcasts, please rate the podcast so other people that find this stuff sort of interesting can find the show easily. And yeah, thanks a lot for listening. This is Soil Matters. Ciao, ciao.
Pure desire for passion.